So, hi everybody, and welcome to Dawn's Diorama. It's Sunday, the 17th of March, 2013. And tonight I have a very special guest on, and he's an anti-witch hunt campaigner. His name is Damon Leff, and he's the director of Pagan Rights Alliance, and that's www.paganrightsalliance.org/advocacy. But any links that we mention on the show tonight will be in the video description, as usual, on the YouTube, and it will be spread everywhere. So, Damon is coming on the show tonight to talk about the work of his organisation in campaigning against the torture and murder of those accused of being witches in South Africa. Why is it happening still today, and what can be done to help stop these horrific crimes against humanity? Damon's website states that the South African Pagan Rights Alliance, SAPRA, was formed in 2004 as a faith-based pagan human rights activist alliance. SAPRA currently fulfills several important functions in line with its constitutional mandate, namely to promote the guaranteed liberties and freedoms enshrined for all South African pagans in the Bill of Rights and assist South African pagans whose constitutionally guaranteed rights and freedoms have been infringed due to unfair discrimination to obtain appropriate redress. So on tonight's show, we shall be focusing on Damon and SAPRA's role in fighting for the rights of those accused of witchery. Deuteronomy 18:10-12 states that no one shall be found among you who makes a son or daughter pass through fire, who practices divination, or is a soothsayer, or an augur, or a sorcerer, or one that casts spells, or who consults ghosts or spirits, or who seeks oracles from the dead. For whoever does these things is abhorrent to the Lord. And that's if you believe in religion. Exodus 22:18 prescribes, "Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live." 1 Samuel 28 hath cut off those that have familiar spirits and the wizards out of the land. The above three quotes are from the Old Testament Hebrew Bible, and they were kind of relevant to the theme. So, the words sorcerer, sorcery, and witchcraft are all four interchangeable. And one thing that has been long forgotten from the text is pharmakia. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. The use of alchemical products in the body that once has been since translated into sorcery, witchcraft, but originally it was separate from witchcraft, separate but related, and those practicing pharmakia were witches. Obviously, due to modern science, the part that condemns medicine has been translated out and still in there, but doesn't blame medicine, only witchcraft. However, the witch hunt is still on worldwide and stronger than ever. Could it be that current drug laws are just an extension of witch hunting? Damon, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you, Dawn. Thanks for in the invitation. I'm very well. Thank you, and you?
I'm good, thanks, and it's great to have you on. First of all, can you take us back to the beginning? As I'm really fascinated, and I'm sure the listeners are, to hear how did it all start for you and how you ended up at this point running campaigns to put an end to the barbaric witch hunts in South
Sure.
Africa.
Thank you. Thank you. Our actual campaign started in 2008, but there was a lot that led up to that campaign. When we formed our organization in 2004, we were aware of several advocacy campaigns run by various Chapter 9 institutions. These are non-governmental institutions set up under the Constitution to protect and defend the liberties guaranteed in the Bill of Rights. And during the 80s, toward the end of the apartheid era, there was an incredible upsurge of violence. An aspect of that violence was witch hunts. In TRC documents, that is the Truth and Reconciliation documents, dating from the 80s and 90s, sorry, looking at issues in the 80s and 90s, reviewed witch hunts and realized that they were far worse than anyone had anticipated at the time. There was some mention that the ANC at the time had actually encouraged these, but that was largely disputed at TRC hearings. Several researchers began to investigate the issue of witch hunts, which occurred primarily in the northern provinces, Limpopo and Mpumalanga. And they, together with the gender equality, which was tasked to protect a woman, specifically in issues related to women, and the Human Rights Commission, issued a declaration called the Toyoyanda Declaration, in which witch hunting was identified as a crime against humanity, and a number of issues were put on the table that government needed to deal with. Unfortunately, toward the end of the 90s and the beginning of our new dispensation under Nelson Mandela, the entire issue of witch hunting was swept under the carpet, and none of the recommendations were ever followed through by the organizations responsible. So when we formed our organization in 2004, we were aware of this history. We were also aware of the fact that many of our members self-identify as witches, whether as Wiccan or as witches practicing a European variety of witchcraft. And there was some concern that if we were to encourage our members to make themselves known publicly, to get out of the closet, that they might become victims of witch hunts in the future. So that was an aspect of our advocacy that we had to consider at some point or another. And then, to cut a long story short, in 2007, the South African Pagan Council in Melville had a seminar on issues relating to a new bill that was drafted by the Mpumalanga government called the 2007 Witchcraft Suppression Bill. And it was basically a carbon copy of the existing 1957 Witchcraft Suppression Act. But it would have gone further in that it would have made anyone who self-identified as a witch in Mpumalanga criminal, or would have criminalized them under the act, under the law. And we have many witches living in Mpumalanga, including the CEO of SAPRA. So it was a signal that our campaign needed to begin in earnest. And so in 2008, we began the first 30 days of advocacy against witch hunts. The advocacy lasts from 29th of March to the 27th of April. And the 27th of April is Freedom Day here. But, of course, our advocacy is ongoing. It's an everyday thing. Although we each have our own jobs, our dedication to SAPRA and the advocacy is something that demands our attention every single day.
That's a very thorough answer. Thank you for that. You mentioned some of your members are witches. Can you tell us what would you define as a witch?
The term in this country is used by several different groups of people to mean different things. So people who actually self-identify as witches would either identify witchcraft as their religion or as their chosen spirituality. It is a religio-magical practice, no matter which way you look at it. Of course, people who choose to self-identify as witches automatically take on the historical baggage that surrounds the words witch and witchcraft. One of the issues raised at the 2007 Melville mandate was if we publicly identify as witches, we need to begin to reclaim the words witch and witchcraft. And by that I mean we need to begin to identify people who now use the word openly and consciously, not as criminals, because the word in this country, the word witch still means criminal or muti murder. We can discuss what muti murder means later on. But we needed to differentiate between people's fantasies or historical fantasies about witchcraft and what actual practitioners say about their religion. Now, this is an ongoing process because we have an extremely conservative and often prejudicial media with regard to religious minorities and especially witchcraft. The historical weight of prejudice around these words still means that the media will, if they do interview witches for any reason, do so in such a way that they're characterized as odd or outside of society, when in fact all our members who do identify as witches live very much in society. They're doctors, lawyers, academics, secretaries. You know, they're ordinary people. They have families. They live ordinary lives. One thing they do is possibly worship nature or worship the gods and goddesses of Wicca. They're certainly not criminals.
Okay. So can you explain to us what witch hunts are, and can you talk to us a bit about their history and how far back in history is there reports of this barbaric practice taking place that you're aware of?
Academics have questioned whether or not the witch hunts we're seeing happening now have always been a part of African society. Some people say that in essence, there may always have been people who were accused of practicing malevolent or malefic magic. We don't doubt that there may have been, so although we don't have any pre-European evidence to prove one way or the other. We do know that with the arrival of missionaries and colonialists in Africa and in South Africa, the terms witch and witchcraft were brought along, and if you remember, fairly at the end of Europe's witch hunts, these terms were being introduced into Africa. They were being introduced into Africa to identify and name concepts, belief systems, and practices, which in fact the people who practiced them did not identify as witchcraft. But the terminology stuck. So today you're sitting with the situation that traditional healers throughout Africa, irrespective of what they're called, are automatically classified by most of the European media and academia in Africa itself as Africa's witches, when in fact no traditional healer in Africa self-identifies as witchcraft. The term witch and witch terms, witch and witchcraft, are still used in almost all traditional African societies to mean a practitioner of malevolent evil magic. Witchcraft is something akin to Satanism and the devil. There you can see the European influence, because in Africa, the English terms witch and witchcraft are closely related to a belief that witches are in league with the devil and are empowered by the devil in order to cause misfortune. So what we see in almost every African country, but I'll talk about South Africa specifically because that's the context I understand best, that we see ordinary people believing in these, and I call them fantasies because I can differentiate between actual witchcraft and fantastical witchcraft. Fantastical witchcraft, by that I mean people when experiencing misfortune of any kind, sudden death, an accident in the family, will automatically, instead of saying, well, accidents happen to everybody and it's a pity that it happened to one of our members, or, you know, everybody can get sick and let's identify what the disease is. The solution is, well, witchcraft must be responsible because this misfortune is always caused by witchcraft. And if there is witchcraft involved, then it must be a witch involved. And traditional law in Africa generally says that witchcraft is passed through the bloodline, so from the breast, from mother to daughter, and that if witchcraft has occurred in your family, then it is actually somebody in your family who has caused you harm. And the consequence of this unchallenged belief, centuries-old unchallenged belief, is that today we see accusations of witchcraft against all kinds of people. But firstly, I have to clarify that the people being accused do not self-identify as witches, not in any language. One out of maybe 100 of them might identify as a traditional healer. And I've, as a result of the work I've done with SAPRA, we've discussed this issue with many different traditional healers. And traditional healers whom we've discussed this with have said in no uncertain terms, they are not witches, they do not practice witchcraft. So the accusations themselves are generally always baseless. One assumes, given historical records, that these people must have done something wrong, otherwise why would they be accused? But the facts show that these people are innocent, usually old women suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's, sometimes men, quite often innocent children become the victims of accusations as well.
Yeah, is this race specific, or is it like both, is it all races that are involved, or can you tell us about that?
It's an awkward question to ask, and it's an awkward question to ask and answer because of our history with racism in this country. But unfortunately, the accusations and the accusations are made by black South Africans against black South Africans. I have yet to come across a news report in the last 10 years that indicate that a white person was accused of witchcraft in any sense of the word that black people are. We don't have white refugees of witchcraft accusation, but we do have hundreds of thousands of black refugees of witchcraft accusation. So it is unfortunately a, well, let's call it a cultural issue, because we find that most witchcraft accusations take place within specific cultures within South Africa. We're a multicultural country. We don't have one single culture. And the accusations of witchcraft usually occur within Nguni-speaking cultures. So Xhosa, Zulu, Sotho.
Okay. Yeah, I take your point. Can you explain to us, if one member, for example, if one member of a family is accused, does it ever fall that the rest of the family are targeted also?
It does, unfortunately, and that's the tragedy of it. I'm just looking for a press release from here. A 2010 case, which was for me the most striking. There are many others. We've kept detailed news reports of cases since 2008. On our website, we have news reports from 2010 to 2012. And one of those that occurred in 2010 was an elderly woman from KwaZulu-Natal, Angelina Mabida. She was 58. She was accused by her neighbors of witchcraft. She lived in a quite a large family. We have strange family structures in this country due to the prevalence of HIV/AIDS. So we have many woman-only families. We have families where older children literally take the lead in looking after younger kids. But in this case, we had a grandmother, a mother, and 7 siblings. Seven children living in the house with these two women. The mother was 45, the grandmother is 58. The youngest child is 9 months old. So one night after the accusations had been flying for a couple of days, one night the entire house was set alight with all of these people in it. So killed in this incident was a nine-month-old baby. Children aged 6, 7, 16, 9, 25. Horrific. And I can pull out several cases that involved an entire family being wiped out as a result of an accusation against one member of that family.
Dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. So what do you think is the main motives that these, inverted commas, witch hunters have? Why do you think they're doing this?
I think there's so many reasons that could motivate witch hunts. The obvious one is jealousy. You'll be surprised to know that accusations are made as often by women as they are by men. So it's not necessarily a gender-based violence issue, because men are not necessarily just picking on women. Very much the accusations may also arrive from a woman against another woman. There may be sibling rivalry between two women in a family. And the heated exchange may later on lead to an accusation of witchcraft simply because one of the women want to get the other woman out of the family or out of the house. Other reasons include, as I said before, the fundamental belief that all misfortune of every kind is caused by witchcraft. And that fundamental belief will motivate even false accusations of witchcraft, for example, in the case of jealousy. The reasons for accusation may include the sudden death of somebody in the family, an unfortunate incident in which somebody gets killed in an accident, unemployment. In 2011, a news article was published in which an MEC, I think it was the MEC of Gauteng, I may be wrong, warned that the show of wealth could now lead to accusations of witchcraft. And I know it sounds weird, but where you find in impoverished areas where some people succeed in spite or despite of their poverty, other people will look at them and wonder how they became wealthy. They don't think, well, this person obviously worked really hard in order to gain their wealth. They will automatically assume that this person is using some mooty, some magic, And that in effect, by doing so, they are stealing the wealth from other people who don't have it, which is a totally illogical reasoning. But in every case that I've looked at, all the accusations of witchcraft have been entirely illogical. So there's no sense in trying to make sense of them. All of this comes down to the fact that people believe certain things about the world around them. And some of these beliefs need to be challenged by scientific evidence or the lack thereof.
So without wanting to sound patronizing, it's a case of maybe not education is the word, but trying to teach or trying to give them a better understanding of, I don't really know how to word it.
No, you're absolutely right. Education is the right word to use. And we're not using it in the sense of we know everything, you know nothing.
Exactly, that's what I was trying to put across.
Yeah. I can give you examples of there have been a couple of reports from Zimbabwe where a woman, usually in her elderly 50s or 60s, has been found naked standing in the yard of a neighbor's house. And when these women are apprehended and the police are called, they will immediately charge this woman with having fallen from the sky, from the magic aeroplane in the sky or a winnowing basket in the sky, in order to do harm. And the old woman, and the two cases I can clearly remember, both suffered from dementia. So when they were informed that they were witches and that they had been flying in a magic aeroplane and that they had fallen from the sky, automatically assumed that what they were being told was correct and said, yes, I did fall from the sky from a magic aeroplane. Now, scientifically implausible, and therefore one must look at the whole thing with a lot of skepticism and say, we understand that these women were suffering from dementia. We also understand that the people who made these accusations don't even know what dementia is. So we need to train them. We need to educate them on what happens to an old person when they begin to lose their mind. They often do very, very strange things. And it doesn't mean that they're malevolent. It doesn't mean that they're practicing harmful magic. It simply means that we must have compassion for their medical condition. And so I know the UN has identified this in several areas, female mutilations. There are whole aspects of issues which need to be, or rather around which education needs to be presented to the ordinary man in the street.
It's not an overnight thing. It's going to take a while.
Absolutely, yes.
To implement things and measures to be able to do this. Can you explain to us what a witch doctor is and what their role in witch hunts are?
Sure. Well, the term witch doctor is generally a Central and Northern African term. It's used most often in Central and Northern Africa. The term witch doctor is hardly ever used by traditional healers in South Africa. So we have a class of traditional magical practices called traditional healers, practitioners called traditional healers, and they're divided up into two basic types. You get isangomas, who are diviners essentially, but they practice traditional forms of healing. And even though we have a fairly good health system in this country, statistics show that most rural and even urban black people will, even if they do visit hospitals or doctors, will also visit an isangoma. And the reason for that is that illness can be brought on or relieved through the actions of the ancestors. And so people who are sick, once they've gone to see the doctor and they've gone to the chemist to get their medicine, will go to an isangoma and say, could you please talk to my ancestors and find out whether or not I have done anything wrong in order to be sick? And so in that sense, isangomas serve as diviners. They will contact the ancestors, they will go into trances, they will read bones, and then they will help the person. In a sense, authentic isangomas serve a valuable purpose in traditional societies because they serve as the unofficial psychologists, and they help people deal with issues emotionally and spiritually, and they do a very good job in that. Then you have the inyangas, who are the traditional herbalists. Their job is tasked solely on remembering the herbal lore passed down from generation to generation, and then providing that law through medicines for people. So we've spoken to many, as I said, traditional healers, and they simply do not use the term witch doctor. They regard the term witch doctor as contrary to everything that they stand for traditionally. A witch doctor also traditionally is, or rather, in modern parlance, we tend to use, I've seen people use the word witch doctor to mean witch. Witch doctors throughout Africa do not identify themselves as witches. If you look at the word very clearly, it says witch doctor. In other words, somebody who doctors witchcraft, somebody who uses a traditional African form of magic to counter a malevolent African form of magic. So the term witchcraft is never actually used in that sense. And witch doctors may or may not be ethical. It really depends on where you are and who you're talking to. In this country, we have several ethical organizations representing traditional leaders, traditional healers, sorry. And the same applies to most other African countries. Where we see witch doctors in the news most often is in relation to what I referred to earlier as a Mutu murder. We have a horrible aspect in this country and in other places in Africa. You've probably heard of the Tanzanian mutilation of albinos. Again, an issue which the media and the authorities in Tanzania conflate with witchcraft, but it has nothing to do with witchcraft because the people practicing these crimes are not witches and they don't identify what they do as witchcraft. So in this country, people and in Africa, as I said, criminals are hired usually by unscrupulous and unethical traditional healers of one or another form to harvest human body parts from a living victim. And then they kill that victim. These body parts become a part of the tissue trade. And there is a huge issue with human tissue trade between southern countries in Africa and in northern countries in Central Africa. So unfortunately, both witch doctors and traditional healers tend to blame witches for these crimes, when in fact the evidence will show that the people perpetrating the actual crimes are just criminals. They've been employed, and their sole motivation here is wealth. And the people who are employing them, the traditional healers, are actually not accepted by ethical traditional healers. Ethical traditional healers have repeatedly said, we do not use human body parts in our traditional medicines, although they do use animal body parts, which we witches find strange because it doesn't seem to have any medical cure basis. But I think I've answered your question regarding witch doctors.
Yeah, that's a very thorough and great response. Yeah, you're giving very full answers and giving us a lot of information to digest. So thank you. What I was going to ask you was, what's the main differences between a cunning person and a witch?
Yeah, well, the term cunning woman or cunning man, an ancient European term, doesn't really apply to Africa, but it can apply if you're looking for likes. One could say that traditional healers in Africa are equivalent to the cunning men and women of Europe. The difference is that, of course, the cunning men and women of Europe were Christians, practiced largely a Christian-based a religious practice that was focused on healing. If we look at the kinds of charms and enchantments that cunning men and women used, very often you will see references to Jesus or God. So it's clearly a Christianized form of, if we can even call it, witchcraft. Traditional healers, as I said, in this country don't identify themselves as witches at all, but they do identify themselves as traditional healers.
Right. So what basically is the consequences of someone that's been accused of witchcraft? What's the worst case scenario that could happen to them, and what other forms of punishment are there as well?
Well, I would imagine burning to death in your home is probably the worst case scenario. But with regard to statistics for witch hunts, I think that's important that I raise that now because it's relevant. There are no standard statistics for witch hunts in this country, and for that, because the South African Police Services does not record statistics for witch hunts. They record statistics for assault, GBH, or murder, but they won't specify what the motivation for that murder was. So it's very, very difficult to say that X amount of people are killed every year in this country for. But we do know that more people are tried in traditional courts for witchcraft, on accusations of witchcraft, than are murdered in mob justice. And in a mob justice, for example, somebody might be accused and access to a trial, not be given access to any kind of support or defense. They are accused, automatically considered guilty, and murdered as quickly as possible. Usually an entire village can participate in something like this. I think you'll have one or two people who are motivating the entire scenario. You'll have drunk youth who will jump on board and gleefully perpetrate violence, whilst the rest of the village is literally in a state of shock. And the last thing they will do is prevent it or try and prevent it. We've had cases before where police have arrived just in time, have had the opportunity to save the victims. In most cases, they do, thankfully. But in some cases, they haven't been able to, because the minute they want to intervene, everybody around them threatens them, you know, because to defend a witch, an accused witch, or to protect an accused witch means that you yourself must be a witch. So it's really, really difficult.
That's very sound logic, that, isn't it? So what exactly do the witch hunt trials involve, and how often are people convicted? What kind of statistics are there as regards that? As regards, like, for example, as well, the people that receive the most severe form of punishment for being accused of it?
Traditional courts operate in sort of a legal vacuum. The Constitution recognises their right to exist. Our Constitution sort of attempts to, at the same time as bringing us into a democracy, a first world democracy with a first world legal system, also accepts the fact that rural traditional African societies have their own system of courts. Courts usually are composed of the chieftain or the tribal elders, usually but not always men. And the accusations brought against somebody in a traditional court will be held out of camera. So nobody will be reporting on what is said in such courts. There have been a couple of books published recently. Isaac Niehaus published a book recently. I don't remember the title offhand, but I will remember it now. Where he described what happens in these traditional courts. And so I can reference that, as well as more recently our government is attempting to pass a traditional courts bill, which would actually give these courts greater status, which, of course, we're totally against, because if I can explain, these traditional courts deal with witchcraft in the most prejudicial way. For them, witch cannot be a positive word, and anybody who is accused of witchcraft is probably guilty. Now, these courts don't judge a person accused based on evidence. Obviously not, because there is no evidence. In 9 out of 10 cases, there is absolutely no evidence of any wrongdoing. If it is believed that a witch can simply cast a spell on another person by simply thinking evil of them, then there can be no evidence. So these courts rely on traditional healers to determine guilt or innocence, which is frightening. In this case, Isangomas, who are the diviners, will be brought in order to judge whether or not the accusations are true. How a traditional healer can identify whether or not an accusation of witchcraft is true or false, I don't know. I read tarot cards. I am a diviner. I am familiar with other methods of divination, and I have many friends who practice divination. And I would not place a person's life on the balance based on my reading of it. I think if you're dealing with a court of law, irrespective of what kind of court of law, evidence must be primary, and that evidence must be demonstrable. You must be able to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that the person who has been accused of causing harm to somebody else has actually done so. Now, unfortunately, most people who are tried in these courts, and some are given reprieve, some are excused and found not guilty, but most are found guilty, and their judgment will entail the paying of a fine, usually a cow or a goat, mealie meal, oil, cooking oil. The odd thing is that the fine is determined by the persecutor, the accuser. The judge will ask the accuser, what do you want in exchange for the crime that has been committed against you? And the accuser can basically ask for anything, even if the person being accused is dirt poor, has nothing, owns nothing, has just lost her entire home and family in a blaze because she's been attacked. She will still be required to pay compensation to the court and to the accuser, which isn't justice. It simply isn't justice. In the worst case scenario, people who are found guilty of perpetrating witchcraft in a village may be banished. And in fact, that frequently happens most often. And we're sitting with a refugee crisis at the moment. Well, we call it a crisis because we understand what's happening. Our government denies that that we even have refugees of witchcraft accusation. So what happens is the tribal elder or the chieftain will declare that the person is guilty and then banish them from their birth home. And they'll most often be banished with their entire family because, remember, witchcraft travels by the blood and is passed from breast to breast. So the entire family will be forced to move with the accused, with the guilty. And since the 1980s, these tribal courts have actually banished victims of accusation to refugee villages in the Northern Province, in Limpopo specifically. We've identified through the work that we've been doing with the CRL Rights Commission, which is the only Chapter 9 institution in this country which has supported our advocacy and is actively working with us in order to prevent further violence. We've identified that there are three unofficial refugee villages in Limpopo province which house families, not just individuals, accused of witchcraft. There is a fourth, which used to be a village in the 1980s, which is now a small town. And that village is filled with men, women, and children, and whole families who were victims of accusation in the 1980s. Remember when I began the interview, I discussed the Gender Commission and the Toyanda Declaration. Well, that town is still in existence. And last year, when the CRL Commission visited these refugee villages in order to begin to listen to the stories of the victims and to find a way in which we could help them, because they do need access to justice and medical assistance and psychological assistance. The lady who was conducting the interviews called me during the day and said, you won't believe this, Damon, but people are arriving as we speak. New victims of accusation are still arriving today. So these villages are eventually going to spill over. Now, if the government is not acknowledging their existence, they're not getting any kind of services. They're not getting any kind of special services, the kind that they need.
Yeah, it's very worrying indeed, and see exactly why you formed your alliance. It's really, if people want to help, if people want to get involved, how can they go about that?
Thank you, Dawn. If people would like to get involved, firstly, find out more about the situation, because really it isn't just a South African situation. It is a global situation at this point. India has per capita far more incidents of witchcraft accusations than Africa. And there are many, many, many countries in Africa. So you can imagine how many accusations and which violent witch hunts are happening. We recently saw the gruesome burning of a young girl in Papua New Guinea. I don't know if you saw that one. So they're happening everywhere. And visit our advocacy website, have a look at the information that we put on there. Go to www.paganrightsalliance.org, and at the top you'll find a link to our advocacy page. On the advocacy page, you'll find a link to a petition. Please go to the petition and sign the petition. Share the petition with other people you know. give them the link to our advocacy page so that they can become informed. Because very often if you ask people to sign a petition against witch hunts, they will misunderstand what it's all about. They automatically think that witches in South Africa are being persecuted. Well, real witches are not being persecuted, but real witches are trying to prevent further persecution of innocent people. So please sign our petition, share the information that you have with other people. If you want to financially support the advocacy, at the bottom of that page, you'll see that we're selling T-shirts. We're selling a red and black T-shirt in support of the advocacy. None of the money raised from the sale of these T-shirts is sent to either me or to anybody personally involved in advocacy. We all do this free and gratis. We don't get paid any salary for it. Every cent that we make for the advocacy gets put back into the advocacy next year.
Okay. Thanks, Damon. I'll put all the links in the video description. There was a question from the chat room. We'll just go back to that just now. What does the advocacy group do to the counter the accusations?
Well, our work happens on a number of levels. Primarily, we're dealing with government. So we're writing to government officials, to government departments. We're sensitizing them to the issues that we constantly face. Every time we get a new media report of a witch hunt, we will try and contact the MEC or the regional provincial government in that area. We will try and make contact with somebody who's actually interested in helping us, because let me tell you, most people we contact are simply not interested. They're not interested because they personally believe that witchcraft is real, alive, and dangerous and must be suppressed. So we'll try and contact a person who has an open heart and who is willing to listen. And we'll make public statements condemning the accusations. We try to work with the media as much as possible. As I said, the mainstream media in this country doesn't want to admit that the issue is as big or as dangerous as it is. When we do occasionally get coverage, for example, from the Mail and Guardian has given us coverage on witch hunts in the past, they tend to treat the report as a one-off, but there's no follow-up. So there's no serious investigative journalism around the issue. We try to – very often we get telephone calls from people who will phone and say, my mother has just been accused of witchcraft. What can we do? And we will guide them through the process of, firstly, if their mother or parents or family members are in danger, to get them out of that immediate area. Secondly, to put them in touch with a police station, a sympathetic policeman, because remember, not all policemen in this country are sympathetic to this kind of crime. So we'll try and put them in touch with a sympathetic policeman at the right stage. And it's very important that accusations of witchcraft are not ignored. So we encourage the victims of accusation to lodge a complaint against their accusers with the police. And we try as much as possible to follow up with the police, but we're not getting the mutual cooperation that we hope and expect from the police force. So part of our program as well is to deal with the occult-related crime unit. Now, the occult-related crime unit dates to, again, the 1980s. To 2001 it closed. So, 1990s. And the occult-related crime unit has just recently been given a mandate to investigate accusations of witchcraft. So we're trying to set up at the moment reliable contacts with sympathetic ears within this unit, so that our goal is if we get telephone calls from people who are facing accusation, we can immediately put them in touch with the right people. We can get the right assistance to them. At the moment, victims are not given any kind of counseling or psychological assistance after the attack. So they're living with the violence and the abuse and the accusation continuously because they're not being given a way out. So a part of our issue is to work with Department of Health, the Department of Social Services. All of these departments have a particular role to play in assisting living victims, but also we want the government to acknowledge that there are victims of witchcraft accusation who have died. And so on our website, we have a page called Remember Their Names. And that documents the people who were murdered. We're determined not to forget their names. So that's some of the things that we do. This year, we specifically decided to take the advocacy one step further. And Mogos Fontlili, who's our CEO, she's also the convener of the South African Pagan Council. She is coordinating an art exhibition in Mpumalanga. That's the second highest province, the second highest incident rate of witchcraft accusations happens in Mpumalanga, in a town called Nelspruit. And we invited members of the CRL Commission and other important stakeholders to attend the exhibition, where Morgoz will take people through every single piece of art and explain that in context of what is actually happening. It is just one way that we're using, one avenue we're using to try and get the message out there. We realize that ultimately we need to inform and educate as many people as possible. And at the moment, we're not reaching our target, but we are well on the way to doing so.
It sounds like you're doing a lot of really, really good work to that effect. And it's great that I'm just happy to be able to give you this platform to get that information out there, because it's so vital, obviously, if the mainstream media over there are ignoring this very much. Really alternative, I don't even like the word alternative, but the non-mainstream media is the only other alternative to get this information out, really.
The non-mainstream media has been a wonderful support. Both bloggers, you, for example, Ruth Ann, many people have desperately tried to help us in any way that they can. In this country, the mainstream media still treats us as a religious minority. And even though we have rights under the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, even though we have our own appoint our own religious marriage officers legally under the Department of Home Affairs, even though our organization is listed with the Department of Home Affairs as a religious organization, I think when we approach journalists generally or editors generally and say, look, we are pagans, we are doing this campaign, again, this advocacy against witch hunts, they will scoff, firstly, at the very idea that we identify ourselves as pagans, or that we identify ourselves as witches, even worse. So our advocacy message keeps meeting this wall of denial. Oh, no, you can't possibly be that, so everything you say to me can't possibly be true. But we push with certain journalists because we know that they simply don't understand the issues. And when they do understand the issues, we see a response. But unfortunately, that response has been slow in coming from the National Editors Forum in South Africa.
Well, Damon, you're welcome to come on again in the show, and you're also welcome to stay on for the Dark City show tonight. But before we finish up, I've still got a couple of things I want to ask you. And actually, a member of the Dark City crew, Robo Hippie, is asking something which actually ties in with my next question for you.
Sure.
So what I was going to ask you about was what legislation exists at the moment in relation to the witch hunts, witchcraft, but also Roba Hippie was asking, have the group gone to court? Has the Pagan Rights Alliance gone to court? So could you talk a little bit about both of those, please?
Okay, courts, access to court, unfortunately, access to courts in this country is impossible unless you're wealthy. And unfortunately, that's true. We simply don't have the financial means to go to the High Court, which is where we would have to go, or a constitutional court. But in order to get to the Constitutional Court, we will first have to take a case to the High Court. We don't have the funds to do that. We've approached a number of attorneys and we've asked them for their assistance. We've approached a number of advocates and said, look, this is an issue we're dealing with. It's a national issue. It's in the interests of everybody. It's not a religious rights issue. Please, could you assist us? And we get not really interested because it costs money. Our advocacy has always been, let's get on the ground and do it in a far more simple way. The court for us is the last resort, certainly. If we find that we cannot achieve our goals through the advocacy, through the process we've initiated, then we will have to end up in court. But the first thing we did in 2007 was SAPRA issued an appeal to the South African Law Reform Commission, requesting that the existing 1957 Witchcraft Suppression Act, that's Act 3 of 1957, be reviewed. And the South African Law Reform Commission agreed with the process of reviewing Project 135, as it's now called. So that is well underway. An issue paper is currently being developed. and that will hopefully stimulate debate on the issue arising both from the legislation and our objections. And our objection to the Witchcraft Suppression Act was very simple. We objected first and foremost to the suppression of witchcraft. If witchcraft is a recognized religion in this country, as it is now under the constitutional guarantee of religious freedom, there can't be a corresponding act on the statute condemning or criminalizing witchcraft. So that needs to be looked at. But we also need to remember the history of the Act. The Act was written in 1957 not against real witches, but against traditional healers who, as I explained, were falsely identified as witches by colonialists and colonialist governments. And the National Party never questioned that, the old National Party. So the 1957 Witchcraft Suppression Act was actually meant to suppress traditional African practices, including divination, but it also outlaws making accusations of witchcraft. So what we don't want is to remove the prohibition against making of accusations. But we need the Act to be redrafted in such a way that it doesn't criminalize witches, it doesn't criminalize traditional healers. So the appeal has been supported by the South African Pagan Council and the Traditional Healers Organization. The Traditional Healers Organization is the second largest healers or traditional healers organization in the country. And we'll have to see where that goes. The Law Reform Commission is understaffed, has lack of funding, so this could drag on for many, many years. But I think that once the Witchcraft Suppression Act has been reviewed successfully, we may find a better mechanism to try and deal with the issue in law.
Okay, thanks, Damon. I've just got two more questions I want to ask you just quickly before we finish up. And as I said before, you're welcome to stay on for, we've got another hour after this, the Dark Thank City you. Crew will be joining in, and we're going to open up, we usually open up the phone lines for the, so as we didn't really get the phone lines open tonight because we're having such a good conversation, you're giving so much good information, then if you want to hang about, then
thanks, Dawn.
We can open the lines up, and obviously the Dark City crew can jump in as well because it's
sure.
It's all of our show. So I'll quickly ask you, I was reading an article on your website about the South African police setting up an occult crime unit to investigate the supernatural. Could you tell us a wee bit about this quickly, please?
Well, our objection against... Yes, sure. The AUK unit was originally started a couple of years ago and then folded. And primarily they investigated muti murders, human mutilations. But unfortunately, the people who began the AUKs, I love the name because it implies that they're sitting under a bridge and hiding in darkness, which really is what they are doing. our beloved AUKs are primarily evangelical Christians, who have a very, very particular squinting view of witchcraft and what is actually happening. What is the accusations of witchcraft for them mean that there is no fire without smoke. So we don't believe that they would be able to handle these situations fairly or without bias or prejudice. More recently, we were leaked a memorandum published within the SAPS, which detailed the scope of investigation for the newly reconstituted occult-related crime unit. And it includes ridiculous things like investigating paranormal phenomena. Well, some people, as we argued with the AUKs unit, some people believe in fairies and goblins and elves and Santa Claus. But, you know, there are beliefs. And we don't believe that the South African Police Service should be investigating issues of belief. They're not in the job of guaranteeing the safety of belief or approving a pre-approved belief system. They're in the job of preventing crime. And so if a crime cannot be proven using the laws of evidence in a rational, logical court, we don't believe that they have any place investigating it. One of the things that they've always done is target, specifically in their definition of occult-related crime, they've targeted specifically witches, Satanists, occultists. Now, we've since 2004 we have been advocating against that definition of occult related crime, because as we've argued repeatedly and as they've now finally agreed, although not in writing yet because we're waiting for that, that anybody from any religious background could rationally commit a crime. We can't assume that a particular group of people are more prone to committing crime than any other particular group of people. If we have rationally more Christians in a country than occultists, and more crimes are being committed in the country by Christians, then surely occultists should not be the sole focus of the occult unit crime unit. So they've decided that they've agreed with our arguments, and they've agreed to change the name from the occult-related crime unit to the religious crimes unit. But this is only a tacit agreement. It's only verbal. Until we actually see that on paper, we must assume that the same old will apply, because new detectives are being trained by pre-detectives, and all of them, after having left the SAPS, started warfare ministries. You know what that is, evangelical movements who focus their ministry specifically on waging warfare, spiritual warfare, against occultists of all kinds. And, of course, witches are high up there in the list of whom they wage war against.
Okay. Thanks, Damon. Do you have anything quickly to add just before we finish up about tonight? Because obviously, I know you've had a lot of information to get out, and we probably could have done with having getting you on as a part two and another time or something, because obviously there's a lot of information. But if you have anything quickly, very quickly, to add before the server comes in.
Thanks, Dawn. I think we've done well. I'd just like to say thank you to everybody who has supported the advocacy so far. Thank you for your continued support. And if I have time, I want to say something. Hissa al-Nati, a UN Special Rapporteur on Disability, once said, "One cannot legislate negative attitudes away. You cannot draft laws to eliminate stereotypes. You cannot remove from the hearts and minds of people the tendency to discriminate. But we can speak out. We can begin to eliminate negative perceptions and prejudices."
Okay, thanks very much for coming on the show. And I'm sure we'll have you on again in the future. I'm passing it over to the Dark Sector now, and you're welcome to stay.
Thank you.